Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio on Blog Talk Radio. I'm glad you're with me tonight. Hey, don't forget, Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is such a great organization. They're nonprofit, and their mission is to bring shelter dogs and find homes and train them to work as companion and therapy animals for veterans in need. Check out their website, caninswithacause.com. Okay, we're going to talk about the impossible, because I believe the impossible has happened. It's like all of a sudden the Kardashians presented themselves as virgins. It's like if politicians in Washington came across as smart. And finally, it's like if Donald Trump's hair all of a sudden didn't look like a pile of dead ferrets on his head. Yes, the impossible has happened, my friends. The prosecutor in the Jody Arias trial came across like such a bully at times that Jody Arias actually appeared sympathetic at times. Not saying all the time, just at times. Now, before you beat me, spit on me, and make me write bad checks, just hear me out here. Jody Arias is on trial for brutally killing Travis Alexander. Jody is a lying, conniving, horrid beast of a human being who butchered Travis out of pure jealousy. And we'll get to the particulars of the trial in just a bit. The prosecutor, Juan Martinez, is by all accounts a really good guy. He's a good prosecutor. And Mr. Martinez had the chance of his career. Jody Arias, the defendant in this high-profile case, took the stand, and he had the chance to cross-examine her. Now, look, I'll admit, what I know about a prosecutor actually prosecuting, what I know about that could fit into a hollowed-out quark. That's Q-U-A-R-K. Look it up. It's a little tiny thing. Anyway, having said that, it just seems to me that Prosecutor Martinez went overboard at times. And I actually, occasionally, once in a great while, felt sorry for Jody, and I despise her with every fiber of my being. Mr. Martinez would get stuck in some sort of mental loop that kept playing over and over on things that didn't matter. And he would yell at Jody constantly, to where his yelling finally meant nothing. Usually when someone yells, it's because they're trying to make a point. Not here. Martinez just yelled to yell. Now, Jody got back at him when she said that her memory is bad when men like Martinez scream at her. Ouch. That was her point on that one. Now, my biggest fear is because Mr. Martinez had to scream at her the whole time and spend hours playing useless word games with Jody, my biggest fear is that someone on that jury will actually feel sorry for her, will feel sorry for her enough to hang this jury. That scares me to no end, and I believe in my heart and soul it's a real possibility. And boy, do I hope I'm wrong on this one. And talk about a dichotomy. We're going to go from talking about Jody Arias to talking about a woman who is a tireless victims advocate. She is kind, she is helpful, and we are proud to call her a member of Web Sleuths. Her name, we know her by, is Katie Cool Lady, and she will be joining us here in just a little bit. And Kimster, are you with us, my dear?
Yes, I am. Hello there.
Hello. Okay, I don't know where Katie Cool Lady is. She was supposed to be here, and she's not here, and we're panicking. So what we're going to do is we're going to take you first, and we're going to talk about the Web Sleuths Hot Cold Case of the Week. And let's talk about that first, and then maybe Katie will call in during that time.
That's good. But
okay.
First, you know,
yes?
You know, before I ever talk about the cold case, you know, I like to always ask you throw something in there to make things a little more lively for you, Trisha.
Absolutely.
Because your life is boring. Yeah.
Yeah, it is so, boring, yes.
Yes. But this week, I wanted to know if you are a member of the AFKBPOFPOPL.
If I am, I don't know it because I have no idea what that is. What is it?
It is the Association for Keeping Basement Party on Front Page of Parking Lot.
Okay, got it, That sounds good. What is that? I do know what it is. But I want you to tell me.
It's a secret society on websleuth.com, and because there's always a party in the WebSleuth parking lot, but you have to be a member, and we'll show you how to, or I'll tell you actually how to join after this segment of the show. And also, I wanted to let everyone know that in the hot cases area of WebSleuth, you'll find the case of Elisa Lamb. She is a Canadian woman who was found deceased in a Los Angeles water tank. It's an intriguing case and even brings in a lot of attention from China and from people interested in the Black Dahlia case. Do you know why, Tricia?
Why?
By the Black Dahlia case? I guess it has some, where she was found in the water tank has to do with where the Black Dahlia, that area where the Black Dahlia was murdered many years ago. So,
okay, interesting.
Yeah. Had you heard about this case?
A little bit. It's very interesting.
It's also really sad because she was in a hotel or a motel's water tank.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, our moderator, Summer Breeze, has been keeping on top of that one for us. So be sure to go to Hot Cases, which is in the featured cases area, and look up that case on Elisa Lamb, because I know the members would really like to have some help in there. And we have tons of new guests in there. So we'll have some new members that could glean from some of our members that have been around for a while, if they could go in there and help them too. Anywho.
It's time.
Trisha. In 1972, the O'Sullivan family moved from South Holland to Homewood, Illinois. 15-year-old Nancy O'Sullivan still had friends in South Holland, and so she went back to visit them on March 7, 1974. She never returned home, and her parents reported her missing the next day. Three neighbor boys said that Nancy left their house, walked to the end of the driveway, put out her thumb, and got into a blue Cadillac. Nancy's purse, though, was left at the boys' home. Police never interviewed any of the neighbor boys, and one was later killed in an auto accident in South Holland. Another died at an early age a few years ago, and the third has not been located, and foul play is suspected in this case. And interestingly, a member on WebSleuth said, the hitchhiking at the end of the driveway doesn't seem likely since it was in a residential area. Wouldn't someone go to the highway? And why didn't she take her purse? And there are other clues posted on WebSleuth.com in this case. So please go to www.websleuth.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Nancy along with the link to her thread. But only if you're a member of WebSleuth. So please join today. And Tricia, how much does it cost to join WebSleuth.com?
Oh, my flippin' heck. It is so cheap, I can't even tell you. Well, I will. Absolutely free. Doesn't cost one single red penny or even a copper penny. Doesn't cost a thing. All we need is your email address.
Right.
That's it. We don't want your blood type. We don't want your blood. You can keep it all. It's all yours. That's all we need. Okay, Kimster, thank you very, very much. And I have noticed, and we're gonna tell you some technical things here that it's going on in our big, huge technical studio at Blog Talk Radio. It looks like Katie Cool Lady has called 1, 2, 3, 4 times and dropped it. I don't know if she has been accidentally hanging up or what the deal is. I have no idea. So, Kimster, why don't you go ahead and go in the cloud, and I'm going to take a look at the chat room here, and go ahead and give her a call, see if you can get in touch with her, okay?
Will do.
And
see ya.
And I'm going to go in the chat room here and take a look here and see who is all here. Do you guys remember Romper Room? Miss Julie would get, in my case, it was Miss Julie, she'd get her magic looking glass and she'd say, I see rain, I see paper wing, I see Wonder Llama. And anyway, that's kind of how I feel. I feel like a little kids show host right here with all the little kids. Hey, do you guys have any? Do you guys know who Katie Cool Lady is? Let me give you just a little bit of background. Okay, Katie Cool Lady has been going to the Jodi Arias trial every day, and she's sitting with Travis Alexander's family. And I am going to let her tell you that whole story, how she knows them and such. I don't feel that it's appropriate for me to blab my big fat mouth about this. Okay, that is her story, and I would like her to tell it. But she has been there every day, front and center. She's sitting with the family. So she's watching Jody. She has been coming back to Web Sleuth and been posting her observations for us. And that has what has been just absolutely amazing to all of us at Web Sleuth. She is one of our most popular people. And she is, how can I say this? She is somebody whose heart is so pure in what she does that it almost brings tears to your eyes, because she is a victim's advocate. Unfortunately, she knows what it's like to have a family member who has been murdered. And again, I'm going to let her tell that story. Also, during the show, it appears that Beth Karras may call in. Now, in case you didn't know, Beth Karras, CNN, we love her. She's one of the best. She's been laid off. Can you believe they laid her off? What are they thinking? Oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. Anyway, she's still going to be working with CNN for a little bit, and I'm sure we'll see her now and then, but they've laid her off. And I know how much that we all think of Beth, and a lot of people have been wanting to get a letter-writing campaign together for Beth. And I think that's what we're going to do, is we're going to try and get something going so that the people at CNN know that we love Beth Karras. And why do we love Beth Karras? Because Beth Karras isn't dramatic and doesn't lie. And I won't say who. I'll give you some initials. But she's not like the initials of Nancy Grace, who just flat out makes stuff up. And I don't know what the deal is, but she is the best one there. And I don't know why they would let her go. She tells the truth. She does it without anybody, without any of the big dramatics like other people's who initials start with Nancy Grace. And you know when she tells something, it's the way it is. And she is looking for people to talk to. She wants to get down and talk to everybody there. She's not a snob. She's not a star. And that's why we love her so much. Okay, I don't know what's going on. There's some technical issues going on here. Kimster, if you could come on and give us an update. I can see poor Katie Cool Lady has been trying to call, and I don't know what's going on. Kimster is still in what we call the cloud. I'll tell you what, why don't somebody from the chat room, why don't one of you call in 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. Did you feel that Juan Martinez went overboard in questioning Jody Arias, and that maybe he might have blown it totally and completely, and maybe, just maybe, there might be a hung jury, or maybe even a not guilty? I think so. It scares me absolutely to death. Why don't you call in 760-825-0933 and let me know what you think. Let me take a look in the chat room here and see if anybody is... Oh, people are saying no, 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 no. Oh, let me put the number in chat. Okay, it is area code 760-825-0933. So I do think he did a great job. And somebody, let's see, Bellsmith is saying, no, he had to do the waterboard cross, drip, drip. Well, I agree. I agree with all that. I understand he had to get her to get all riled up and all upset. And he did do a good job a few times when that happened. But it's almost like this mental loop was stuck in his head, and he wouldn't stop badgering her. And here's the problem. From what I've been told about the jury, they were getting bored with it. They were getting fed up with it, basically. And now people are saying, again, Bellsmith, I completely trust GM to know how to read the jury. And again, believe me, I am talking with my thumb up my nose here, or maybe perhaps another orifice. I understand that. I understand that I don't know how it works in a situation like this. But sitting back and watching it, I'm just dying. I'm embarrassed. I'm cringing. I just think it could have been handled a different way. I don't know. I do not know. Let's go here. Okay. Let's see. Do we have... Okay, let's go to Cindy. And Cindy, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I am good, Cindy. What is your comment, my darling?
Well, my comment is regarding Juan Martinez. And mm-hmm. I think he did a great job with Jodi Arias, and I feel he had her basically running in circles to kind of trip her up in her life.
And so you don't think that he went overboard and maybe somebody on the jury is going, oh, my gosh, it reminds me of my abusive father, that poor girl. She didn't know what she was saying or doing, and he's so mean, and why was he so mean? I don't think she did it. You don't think that could happen, or do you?
No. No, I don't think that could happen. I think being bored, I think her defense attorney is totally boring, and her many days of testimony with him was totally boring. And I don't think he was abusive, what she did. I mean, this is just a little bit of what she's going to get in the afterlife. So,
mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that's true.
I think he did a good job, and he was redundant, but I think he kind of went in a roundabout way several times, and he did catch her kind of changing her stories. You know, after...
Oh, he caught her in so many lies. And here's how you can tell that she is a total psychopath, waste of a human being. Every time he caught her in a big lie, she had an excuse. She had something ready to go. Rather than just going, you know what, I lied, and breaking down and saying, I'm sorry, boom, she had another reason for it, you know. I couldn't remember. I was so upset. Boom. Well, I thought that's what I did, but looking back on it, it isn't, and I was just so upset. Boom, boom, boom. You know, it's just one thing after another after another. So, Cindy, thank you so much for calling. I do appreciate it. We have a few more callers we're going to take here. We're waiting for Katie Cool Lady. She's trying to call in. There's some sort of technical difficulty. We don't know what it is. I'm sure somehow, some way, it's got to be Kimster's fault, our producer, because anything bad happens is Kim's fault.
Poor Kimster.
I know. Not mine. Cindy, thank you so much for calling, my dear. You take care. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Cosmic Law. Cosmic Law. Wait, hold on. You're going to go on live here just a second. There we go. Cosmic Law, are you there, my dear?
Yes, it's actually Karmic Law because I do.
Oh, Karmic? Well,
she
said...
Karma.
Yes. I'm so sorry. See, Kimster put down Cosmic. I'm going to fire her. That's all there is to it. Sorry about that. Karmic Law, and boy, do I believe you there, my dear. Okay, tell me what you think. What do you think about Juan Martinez and Jodi Arias?
Well, I had the same impression as Trish. I was getting frustrated mm-hmm. with Juan. I would feel myself cringing. I would feel myself like Jodi Arias was responding, and I would say, oh my God, please don't let him be blowing this. But mm-hmm. then I started to hear that it sounds louder to us when we're viewing it than it does when you're actually in the courtroom.
Oh.
And the way that it does also, he does that even with his own witnesses, but mm-hmm. he did it in such a way that I felt a whole lot better once he started getting her near the end. But in mm-hmm. the first few days, I couldn't handle it. I had to stop, and then I had to start again because I just felt that there was going to be somebody on that jury that was going to sympathize with her.
Exactly, exactly, Karmic Law. I feel the exact same way. I couldn't watch it. I had to change over. I literally one day watched The Brady Bunch instead of this because it was just too much. Watching Alice and Michael and Mike Brady was much better than watching Jodi Arias get screamed at. But now that's interesting that it's louder to us than it is in the courtroom. And that's something that we're going to talk to Katie Cool Lady about when she does call in. And believe me, people, she's trying to call in. There's something wrong with her phone or our phone here. So we're just hoping that we can get it fixed and get her on the air here as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I did want to give a shout out to K-Mouse's transcriptions because I literally did have to stop watching and I had to go to the written transcription on mm-hmm. the media page because it was depressing me so much about one.
Exactly. And that is, did you say, I'm sorry, did you say K-Mouse?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and thank you for doing that, KMS. We're talking about websleuths.com. This is where we all gather to discuss and post about the Jodi Arias case in addition to a million other cases on WebSleuths. Well, thank you, Karmic Law. I agree with you.
You're welcome. Karma
happens. I don't care if you're an atheist. I don't care. It happens. You got to believe in it because I've seen it happen a million times. So thank you, my dear. I'm going to put you on hold, and you take care, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hey, you know what? It looks like we have royalty here, or at least somebody with a title. Lady Edith. Lady Edith has a comment. Lady Edith, am I off my rocker, or what do you think?
You know, I appreciate all the points of view, and they all make sense except for this one thing, which is that Juan Martinez is not interrogating or cross-examining somebody who has a conscience or who is a normal everyday person. If you watched his behavior towards her over the days, it does get increasingly aggressive, belligerent, and scornful. And I think it's because she is so utterly composed. We've seen her on 48 Hours. We've seen her in Inside Edition. She can lie like nobody else. And to break the composure, I think he needs to pull out her, to appeal to her arrogance in other ways, like to make her feel like she's stupid or that she's not answering right. And when he says to her, what were some of the things he would say to her? Do you have a problem understanding? Do you have a problem with your memory? You know, are you having trouble following? I think that to us, that's incredibly abusive, and it is. But to someone who is sitting there like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth after she slaughtered a human being, that's what you need in order to rattle her. She's unshakable.
Boy, now that, Lady Edith, is a great observation, because we're not dealing with a normal human being. We're dealing with a monster who has no feelings. And he would say things like, in fact, I remember, and you probably saw this too, where he said, let's start with the beginning. We're talking about how you murdered Travis Alexander, right? That's why we're here. We're talking about Travis Alexander and the day you murdered him. Do you understand that? You know, he was like that to her, and you're absolutely right. You know, here's the thing that people like me who spout off and at times can sound like an idiot, but we have to remember Juan Martinez, I'm sure, and Lady Edith, I think you'll agree with me on this, has consulted profilers, psychologists, psychiatrists, people who know how to deal with people with no soul, like Jodi Arias. And perhaps
absolutely. I'm fascinated by that. Did you notice there was specifically something very different he did the second day of cross-examination? In the first day of cross-examination, she would, she played the word game, you know, up is down, day is night. And
right.
He would get hooked. He would get hooked. And the second day, when they came back on Monday for the cross-examination, when she would attempt to act as if she didn't know what he was talking about or she needed to hear a question again, he would put that onto Mike. He would say, Mike, read it back to her. That was a way for him to distance himself, not get hooked in, not get pulled into her game, give himself a second to think and figure out where he wanted to take this, and let Mike, who's going to say to him, the court reporter, you know, I don't understand. Can you repeat the question? And so I think that she must, or he must be constantly talking with people who know more about psychopaths. I don't know who those people are, psychopathic experts, you know, but I think he definitely is getting
absolutely. Tips. That would be interesting on a business card. Hi, I'm a psychopathic expert. Nice to meet you. But Lady Edith, thank you for your call, and that is absolutely a brilliant observation. I think you should be sitting here behind the mic instead of me. But right now, we're going to get to Peggy in just a moment, also Stephanie, Dawn, and we'll get to you guys in just a little bit if you can hang on, because Beth Karras is with us. Beth Karras is from CNN, and she's been following this case from the beginning. And let me go to Beth. Beth, hi. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And Beth, Katie Cool Lady, someone that you know, is going to be joining us. We're having some technical difficulties here. She has literally called in like 15 times, And our studio keeps cutting her off. So I'm not quite sure what the problem is, but we'll get her on in just a little bit. But first of all, Beth, I hope you have witnessed the outpouring of love for you. That's another way to put it. Concerning the fact that you will no longer be full-time with CNN. And we just, on behalf of Web Sleuths, Forums for Justice, and everybody here at Trisha's True Crime Radio, we think they're full of crap. And I know you can't say that, but I will, because you are the most amazing reporter. You tell the truth. You're not dramatic. You have a soul. You have a personality. And we know that when you tell us something, we can take it to the bank. We can believe it. So hopefully you'll land. You're going to land on your feet really soon, and I'm sure it'll be something even bigger and better. But Beth, let's talk a little bit. I opened up with talking about Juan Martinez. He makes me nervous, Beth. It makes me crazy because I think he's being too mean. Now, some of our callers have suggested that that's the only way to rattle Jodi Arias, is because she has no soul, that you have to get in there and do that Chinese water torture. What are your thoughts on Juan Martinez? Do you think he's being too rough and too obnoxious?
Well, I think Juan Martinez is being himself. This is a man who has tried about 300 cases. He is a career prosecutor. He is senior in that office. He's a lone wolf. He likes to try cases alone. He has put one of the three women currently on death row in Arizona there. And he can get really down on witnesses, including his own witnesses. He really came down hard on Detective Flores at one point regarding the sequence of the fatal wounds when Flores said at a hearing long before trial that the gunshot came first, and he said that to 48 hours too, because he was interpreting what he thought the medical examiner meant in a personal conversation he had with him. So it's Juan Martinez's style. He can be hard, he can be easy, and I thought he was actually kind of gentle with her at the end of his cross-examination when Arias was crying, talking about the actual killing itself. So I don't know, it's for the jury to judge whether he's being too hard on her. I don't know how to answer that, but she held her own with him, I must say. The two of them going head to head.
I'll say they did that. That was an epic battle. That was like something from, if it wasn't such a serious topic, it would almost be like a game. It was a very epic battle. I just felt that he's given somebody on the jury who perhaps has had an abusive person in their lives, who yells at them, like Martinez did, a reason to hang up this jury, to give them the hung jury, or to even find her not guilty. I'm hoping I am wrong. But as was pointed out, and I don't know if you heard this earlier, Beth, but don't you think that Juan Martinez has consulted people who know, profilers, psychologists, psychiatrists? Wouldn't that be the obvious thing that he does before he goes and cross-examines somebody like Jodi Arias?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, if he would. I think he has a rebuttal witness who's a psychologist, because the next two witnesses for the defense after Arias finishes are expected to be a psychologist and an expert in domestic violence. And then the state will have the opportunity, Martinez will, to put on a rebuttal case, and I imagine that will include a psychologist. So he may have consulted his expert in some of that, but I don't know. Martinez is—he's so good he's so experienced. I don't know that he needs to consult anyone anymore.
Well, maybe he doesn't. Yeah,
in his younger days.
Well, he just—he is good, but I just think he's mean, and that may be a good thing. I have no love lost for Jodi Arias. I despise her as a human being. Let's talk a little bit about the jury. And I know you've been asked this a million times, and I know it's hard to come up with it, but I'm going to ask you again, what's your read on them? What are they reacting to anything? Are they doing anything that gives you a hint of what they're thinking?
Not much. There are 18 of them, 11 men, 7 women. 6 of them will be randomly selected just before deliberations as alternates. They won't be excused, but they'll be allowed to go home, and they still can't watch or read anything about the case in case they have to replace a deliberating juror. So we really don't know what the final makeup will be. Now, not everyone takes notes, but if I had to draw generalizations, I would say the back row sits there and listens and doesn't take a lot of notes and probably doesn't care too much for Jodi Arias. The front row
There are more note takers, it seems, in the front row. Like three women who, look at her, look at Martinez, take a lot of notes. I'm not sure, if that is in Jody's favor or not. There's a woman closest to the witness box in the front row. So if you can imagine, the row, the row of nine in the front, the person who sits closest to the witness box, she doesn't look at Jody Arias that much. She's the closest to her. She will look straight ahead as opposed to a little bit to her left a lot. Maybe by looking at the jury constantly when she speaks, Jody Arias is like, maybe invading that woman's space a little bit too much. She doesn't want Jody to look at her. She, the juror, probably wants to look at Arias, but not meet her eye.
Right.
Arias, at one point in her cross-examination, was it the last day or the next to the last day? She was upset. Then there was a break. It was either lunch or the afternoon break. And when we resumed, she wouldn't look at Martinez when he asked her the questions. It was a total change in her demeanor. She stared at the jury even while Martinez was asking her questions. It was so weird. It was just weird that she would look at the you look at the person asking you a question generally, and she would answer looking at the jury. But she totally changed her demeanor, and I think, I don't know for sure, but I think her lawyers may have said, look, if it's upsetting you to look at Martinez, don't look at him then. Just look away while he's asking you the questions. Look at the jury. And maybe that helped her get through it.
That could be, because I'm sure looking at him, she just seemed to almost cower under him. And I don't think it's because she was scared. I think she was just didn't want to face what she had done. She knew it was leading up to that horrible day, and she doesn't really want to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, well, she also didn't know what he had.
Right.
So he would try to get her to commit to an answer, and she would say, well, I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't remember. I think she was probably afraid to commit to something because she didn't know what he had up his sleeve to counter her. So that's why her memory all of a sudden wasn't as good as it was on direct.
Exactly. And that's, that's what you do when you're lying, is you just say, well, I don't remember. I can't remember. And that's what you do when you prepare, because if someone's going to come back and prove that you're a liar, all you have to do is say, well, I don't remember. And that kind of gives you a little bit of a pass, even though it really doesn't. Beth, we do have a question for you. Would you mind taking a question from one of our callers? Okay. This is Shara. And Shara, hold on. Let's get Shara on here. Shara, you have a question for Beth. Why don't you go ahead?
Oh, hello. Hi, it's Sarah.
Oh, and Sarah, Beth, I'm sorry.
Hi, and Beth, hi. I want to wish you all the luck in the future, and I can't wait to see where you end up.
Thank you. I'm reporting on this trial, okay? I'm not going to go anywhere until it's over. Still on in session, the 2 hours in the morning, and HLN, and even some CNN. I'm on, because I'm really in session on True TV, but I'll be on CNN at 8 o'clock tomorrow, 8:10 tomorrow morning, and maybe later in the morning as well.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you for the duration of this trial.
Great.
I had two questions. One was, do you expect Juan Martinez to tie up the loose ends on the nail salon and the pedophile letters hearing and the attempt to manipulate a witness and Matt McCartney? Go ahead.
Yes. Yes to all that, but some of it's really not before the jury. I mean, we know she went to the nail salon and when she was in Northern California, and she says, I had to wait a long time because there was a long line. It was one of these don't make an appointment, you walk in places. Who knows? Maybe it would be fair comment on the evidence. That's what you can do in summation. He'll say she dyed her hair then. I don't know. But we can expect to hear him perhaps touch on the nail salon. And Matt McCartney, definitely the magazines and the message being sent out, because we know she was sending a message through those magazines around the time there was a hearing on the allegations of pedophilia and those letters, but the jury doesn't know about the letters. Right at this point, they're not going to be part of the case, so I don't know if that part of your question is actually going to be in his summation, but he should tie up everything else.
But it'll be in the summation, not on recross?
Yes. Well, on his rebuttal case, let me think about that. Maybe there'll be something in rebuttal, but the rest of it will be in his closing argument, yes.
Okay. And my second question was about the upcoming defense witnesses. I know they said there was going to be a domestic violence expert and the therapist, Samuels,
yes,
that had worked with Jody. is there anybody else coming up, and are they still on the schedule?
I'm not aware of anyone else. You know, the defense did have Matt McCartney on their witness list. I don't know if he's going to testify. He's the only person, supposedly, who claims to have seen bruising on Jody Arias that would be consistent with, you know, a violent act by Travis Alexander, but I don't know if we'll hear from him. So at least those two experts, Richard Samuels, psychologist, he's expected to say she suffers from PTSD. I don't know what the traumatic event was that gave her PTSD. And then Alice LaViolette. She's got a website. Alice is spelled A-L-Y-C-E.
Okay.
LaViolette is one word, L-A, and then Violette, V-I-O-L-E-T-T-E, Alice LaViolette. And she has worked with battered women for like 3 decades. She has a lot of experience as a domestic violence expert. She's worked with a lot of legitimate cases of battered women. And so we'll see. I mean, she's going to say that, that Jody was a battered woman. That will be interesting to see how Juan Martinez handles that. So these will be two good witnesses for the defense. Doesn't mean that Jody Arias is 100% justified in what she did, but it may mean the difference between first degree and second degree, or manslaughter if they get it, or life or death. I mean, there are a lot of options for the jury. I personally don't see a not guilty because I don't see those any of the 12 jurors all voting, you know, that she should be free. But it could, you know, the defense wants to save her life or get her second degree, which she was willing to plead to a couple of years ago. She was willing to take second degree, and the state wouldn't take it.
Do you still see that as a possibility? Second
degree? It's a lesser included crime, yeah, that the jury will be able to consider. I mean, I think it's a possibility. I don't know if 12 jurors will agree. You know, if the jury's hung, it would be between first and second degree, I think, if they're hung at all.
Oh, it just seems with all the injuries that were inflicted after he was no longer a threat to you,
right.
I can't see self-defense.
Well, one of the most powerful things that Juan Martinez did with her, I think it was Thursday, he flashed up there the picture of the autopsy photo of Travis Alexander's back with all of these gaping knife wounds in his back. And then he was also stabbed in the back of his head. And Martinez said, you would agree, you know, and the photo of the bloody sink that Travis Alexander was standing at the sink when he was smearing blood and dripping blood and spitting. There's blood spatter. He's just dripping into the sink. And that you were stabbing him in the back of his head and in the back and in his back. And we can count the number of times you did it if you want to. We can count them. But you would agree he was no threat to you in your life at the time you were stabbing him in the back, right? And she agreed. So that goes a long way against self-defense.
Oh, I thought self-defense went out the window with that.
Yeah.
I that was a high point for me.
But the experts may say she was, you know, she was kind of out of her head at that moment. You know, she was just reacting, and she was in a rage, and, you know, she's not responsible for how she acted. She just felt that as long as he was breathing, he was a threat. I really don't know what the experts will say because I don't have their reports. I'm not privy to what they said in their reports. But it's a tough case. This is a tough case for the defense, and, you know, they're giving it their all.
Sarah,
thank you so much.
Thank
Sarah,
you.
I appreciate it. And sorry about calling you Shara. Maybe that'll be my nickname
fine.
For you.
You can call me anything.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shara, Sarah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Beth, we have a couple more questions. Do you have time?
Let's see. Yeah, I can take a couple more.
Okay. And Katie finally made it. She is here. She's on hold listening, and we'll get to her in just a minute. But we do have a couple of questions here for Beth Karras that I would like to get to. One of our questions, if a gun was owned by Travis Alexander, why hasn't Jody Arias led law enforcement to the gun location? Is that because she's saying she can't remember where it's at?
Oh, yes. I mean, she's driving in the desert between Mesa, Arizona, and Salt Lake City. Well, I think she threw it away in Arizona, but she said she just threw it in the desert, and she has never said where. So it's gone. I mean, it's been 4.5 years. It's gone. She never said what she did with the gun until she spoke to her experts, right? That was never out there. She always denied having anything to do with it. So it's years. It had been years. So it's gone.
Totally gone. Let me take one more question, and then we'll put Katie Cool Lady on, and you two can say hi to each other, and we'll just kind of go from there. Dawn has a question. Dawn's been holding very patiently, and I hope Dawn is still there. And Dawn, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm good, Dawn. We have Beth Karras on the phone with us. Dawn, what is your question, my darling friend?
Now, I'm thrilled to have Beth on the show. I heard her the first time you had her on a couple weeks ago. My question to Beth is, while we all love to tune in to the shows, the evening shows, it seems to me that a lot of the talking heads, so-called talking heads, make a lot of irresponsible comments. And, you know, I know the jurors aren't supposed to be watching this, but surely this cannot bode well for what's really going on. I mean, I have heard some very gross misinformation being discussed, and I just wondered how she feels about that. She seems to go out of her way to keep it very accurate, keep it very real.
Absolutely, she does.
I can't see the same about some of these other programs, and it's very disturbing, and I wonder if this isn't going to be a problem down the road.
Well, my biggest concern would be if jurors are exposed to it, right? Because, you know, we do have the right to say whatever we want. And, you know, I don't want to speak for people saying what they say. I can only speak for myself, and I try to be factual and down the middle. But jurors are supposed to abide by their admonishments, not to watch, read, listen to reports about a case. And we just have to hope that the honor system that non-sequestered jurors are under, and these are non-sequestered jurors, they go home every night, that they're abiding by it, that they're not tuning in and they're not getting online. And if they are, you know, let's hope they just don't bring it into the jury room and that they just decide the case based upon the evidence they hear in the courtroom. You know, there's harmful stuff out there against Jody, but there's also a lot of talk for Jody. So maybe it'll balance out in the end. I just hope they're paying attention to the judge's orders and not reading or listening.
Dawn, thank you so much. She does, Beth, that does have to go, so we're going to try and wrap it up here. But, Dawn, I appreciate you holding. You are a sweetheart to do so. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Beth, we're talking with Beth Karras, and right now we have an amazing woman. She's a member of Web Sleuths. We call her Katie Cool Lady. We just call her Katie. And Katie has been in the courtroom watching with Travis Alexander's family, watching Jody Arias and all of the goings-ons, if you will. And Katie Cool Lady, thank you. I know there was a little bit of a mix-up. It's cool. Everything is good. Beth Karras came on, and we're just glad you're with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here, too, and I'm glad that Beth got to be on.
I know.
To make up that difference, so thank you. It was a treat for everybody.
It is. And Beth, what is next? What happens tomorrow? I think you may have already told us, but my mind is mush and I can't remember. What happens tomorrow?
We've had 13 days of Jody Arias on the stand, and bulk of your seatbelts, it's not over. She'll be on the stand for probably two more days, maybe a third day, on redirect examination, questioning by her lawyer, and that'll be the end. Martinez does not have an opportunity to do recross. At least that's the general practice. There are exceptions. Sometimes the judge allows it, but generally, no. So after NERMI finishes, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday early, I don't know, then we will hear the jurors' questions for Jody Arias. Right? And maybe one of the defense experts will get on the stand this week. I'm not sure.
Okay, again, this is one of those questions that you're going to roll your eyes at and go, oh, my God, I shouldn't have called. But what do you think the jury might ask Jody Arias? I mean, they have an opportunity. I can't imagine what they would ask. Any thoughts?
Well, I actually haven't thought about that. But first of all, the judge will screen the questions. She goes over them with the lawyers at sidebar. And there may be some questions that are totally inappropriate. Like a juror could say, why did you drive 1,000 miles to see him? Or why did you detour if you were broken up? If you were afraid of him, why did you do that? I don't know if that'll be appropriate, but maybe a juror will say, if you were trying to get away from him, why did you go back? She has already said on the stand he was hard to say no to, and he guilted me out, so she drove, you know, 6 hours to see him from Pasadena. But, you know, maybe they'll want to explore, you know, the gun a little bit more. She simply denied ever stealing her grandparents' gun or having anything to do with a gun. But we know she had a gun in her possession when she got arrested in July. She bought a 9mm after, she told the police, after finding out about Travis's death, acting like she knew nothing about it. She had a 9mm hidden in a new rental car and 9mm ammunition in a suitcase, which police found. The gun hidden in the car wasn't discovered, I think it was Hertz, until Hertz at the San Francisco airport, they found it like a few weeks later in early August after she was arrested. So she hid it really well. The police didn't find it. And I don't know what she was doing. She had some knives on her, too. She was loading her car up. I don't know where she was going, but she had knives and a gun with her.
Oh, boy.
On July 15th when she got arrested.
I would hate to be on her list of people to go visit. I mean, can you imagine she shows up at your house? You just, not a good thing to have Jodi Arias show up in a rental car with knives and guns. Not at all. Beth Karras, we know you have to run. I just want to say thank you, and we're behind you 100%, and we look forward to you during this trial, your reporting.
Thank you. I want to say thank you to everyone who has written to me. I don't have time yet to write back to folks, but I'll still be on In Session through this trial, as well as HLN and CNN. And thank you so much to everybody. I'll be back, though.
Thanks, Beth. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Katie Cool Lady, I am so glad you're here. Oh, my gosh. I was just panicking. I thought, what happened? And, you know, time zone weird stuff. I get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, we just kind of, we flew by the seat of our pants, if you will. And now my pants are almost falling off of me. We've been flying so much, but I think we've gotten back to normalcy now. Katie Cool Lady, a member of Web Sleuths, a much loved member of Web Sleuths, a victims advocate, somebody that we all love and adore. Katie, can we just talk about you for a little bit, and then we're going to move on to the trial and your observations, okay?
Sure.
Tell us what happened in your life that turned you into this incredible victims advocate.
Well, a lot of people on Web Sleuths are familiar with our case, but in 1988, my sister was a victim of homicide.
Oh, hold on. Katie, we lost you. Can you repeat that, please?
Can you hear me now?
Now I can, yes.
Okay. Yeah, in 1988, my sister Cindy was 30. She was a victim of homicide here in Arizona. Actually, it was the same city that Travis was living in. She was living in Ada, Arizona as well. So we went through two death penalty trials, two killers, and they were both convicted and sentenced to death, and that's been over 20 years now. So I have navigated, this whole legal process as a victim for a long time. And, the death penalty process is a whole other segment of this whole deal that I've been navigating with my family, but primarily me, because I've been the only family member most of the time that's lived out here. So that's like it in a real small nutshell.
And how did you get the nickname Katie Cool Lady?
Well, that's such an appropriate question at this time, because when I signed on the internet, to be a person on the internet and had to create a name for my email, it was like in, I don't know, the year 2000 or 99 or something like that. And that was my sister's nickname for me.
Oh.
Yeah. And so she was really and I thought, I want to just resurrect that nickname around me in my life, because nobody's called me that for so long. And so that's where it came from.
Well, we certainly, obviously, can never replace your sister or your love, but know that you do have a lot of people that love you and that will always call you Katie Cool Lady. I wouldn't know what else to call you. So if I saw you, I'd say, hey, Katie Cool Lady. Okay, Katie, let's jump ahead now. You've been on Web Sleuths for a number of years, and you have been so gracious in talking to us and explaining to everybody about this process of going to trial, of the death penalty, of the sentencing. And now you're helping Travis Alexander's family. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in many ways in life, things are just totally serendipity. So there's something else going on, and this was no different, this situation. Mm-hmm. I went down to the courthouse because, like probably, the majority of your listeners, people following this trial, I had seen this case on 48 Hours, and I mean literally just sat there with my jaw dropping. I rewound to the beginning and watched the entire show all over again because I was so, blown away by this sociopath. I had never really seen somebody this clearly I don't even know the word. I guess the word for me is evil. And I just, and that it happened in my backyard. So I kind of filed this case away for all those years, like 4 years. I have a lot of journalist friends. I kept approaching them saying, you guys have got to cover this case. You have got to write about this case. And they were kind of like, no big deal. It was weird, you know. But now one of them is there in the courtroom. But anyway, so I went down there one day. I was out of the country when it started, but when I had a moment, you know, to breathe and I came back, I decided to go down there, and I did not get in. Actually, some little pipsqueak took my seat. He stood in front of me, and I almost got in a fight in the hallway with him. He came out on the break, and I confronted him. Anyway,
good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, so anyway, I was sitting there with Katie, Dr. Drew's juror. That's where I met her. We both didn't get in that day. And chatting, and I got to know her really well that day. That was the day she got discovered by Dr. Drew's producer. All this stuff happened in the hallway that day. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the guy that, at the time that was letting people in let us both in separately, and he let me in on the side of Travis' family. So I was sitting behind, and I just started making a conversation with their victim advocate, having absolutely no idea who she was. I thought she was part of the media. I just was chatting, and then I got to know her a little bit. And then I said, oh, well, I've had a victim's advocate. And, you know, we just started talking about that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then I leaned over and said to her, I would like to come tomorrow and bring a card for Travis's family, if I could pass it to you, if that would be appropriate. And she said, absolutely. Then she handed me her card, and she said, from here on out, you're coming in with us.
Oh, wow.
That's how it happened. And then, so I just kept bringing her card, and then it just got more and more opportunity like that, because then, I became introduced to the family. I found out that they read my victim impact statement, which was online, which was what I wrote in the card, because I really wanted to offer my assistance with helping them write their impact statements if they needed that, because my victim impact statement was actually had an impact on the sentencing.
Yes.
So I felt like I do have a gift in that's something I can help people with, and that's coming up for them. So that was really my first conversation with the family, was Samantha said, I read your victim impact statement.
Oh.
So, yeah. So then, you know, they gave me a blue ribbon, and they just sort of welcomed me, and one of them joked and said, you're now Cousin Katie. And every time I've gone, I've got to sit with them. I know when I go that if there are enough family members, I will not take a seat.
Sure.
But this last week, I was very lucky because there was literally one seat left, and I got it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
Yeah. I feel like I sit there in service to them. But also, I'm telling you, Tricia, the intensity in there is so great. I'm sure for everybody, but especially for me, that I take those notes. Having this job to take these notes and bring them back to Web Sleuth keeps me from going out of my freaking mind.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let me interrupt you here, and let's stay with that for a moment, if we could. We're talking with Katie Cool Lady, who is now sitting with Travis Alexander's family. She's a victim's advocate. Her sister was murdered back in the late 80s, and since then she has devoted much of her time to helping other people in this horrible situation, and now she's helping Travis Alexander's family. And you're in the courtroom, you're taking notes, and you say it keeps you from losing your mind, and it's so intense. Are you just talking about just lately when Martinez has been screaming at Jody, or has it been that way the whole time?
It's been that way the whole time. And, yeah, it for me, you know, I don't know that it is for other people, but for me, sitting in there, it is. And I think there's probably, you know, it's probably reasons I know and don't know, but I have never, ever seen a case, and I've watched a lot of cases up till now, where the victim was so hideously abused.
Oh, dear.
It literally makes me feel like I'm going to scream. I feel like I'm writing things in my notes in all capitals and underlining and all that, because I'm keeping my voice stuffed inside my body, because it is so, talk about heinous. I mean, it really, to me, is heinous. And That's a little project I'm going to start working on in some way. I don't know how or where, but I'm going to start to become a voice for that. Like, where are the limits? We didn't have much of that in our trial. So for me to see that and to watch this family and to hold, because we are getting admonished right and left for our facial expressions, not me, but it's happening around me a lot, and to have them have to be those blank facial expressions when it's
torture for them.
That's impossible. They're human beings with a feeling. If you're Jodi Arias, maybe you can look at those pictures and not have a facial expression. But my God, what do they expect? They should be allowed to put their face down or to cry or put their hand to their face. That's ridiculous that they don't allow that. It's not going to influence the jury. It's the picture. If it influences the jury, they shouldn't be on the jury, because if a facial expression influences them, then they have no business being there. That infuriates me. You mean they're being told, Travis Alexander's family is being told that their facial expressions are too much? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, yeah, and let me tell you a little story that just happened Thursday. One of their best, one of Travis's very good friends, she's been on a lot of the shows, her name's Julie. She showed up in court on Thursday, and Jodi tried to get her kicked out, and I watched this whole thing unfold right in front of my very eyes. I saw Nicole, the victim's advocate, step off the elevator, was near me, talking to him and Jennifer Wilmot. I saw her go right over and approach Julie, and they were trying to get her kicked out of the courtroom because Jodi said she was making faces at her.
Oh, my God. God.
Now that worked against Jodi because she ended up in the front row on the family side. So I mean that was a little twist, but she was definitely complaining about it, and mm-hmm. you know, must be somebody that Jodi recognized sitting out there who was a very good friend of Travis. So things Jodi's, you know, paying attention. The jurors aren't looking out to the gallery much at all.
Right.
Jodi is.
So I don't want to get hung up on this one thing, but I'm just absolutely stunned. So here we have Travis Alexander's family, a very loving LDS family, looking at these pictures of their son who has been mutilated and brutalized and tortured by this psychopath, and they are required by the court to sit there stone-faced. That's the deal?
Yes. Yeah, when the pictures come up, there was just one occurrence when it was a surprise, and that happened to be the day I was sitting in the hallway because they burst out of the courtroom, and Katie and I were looking at each other like, what just happened? Because they were screaming in the hallway, sobbing in the hallway, and that was the day that a picture, Martinez just threw a picture up there that nobody was anticipating, but other than that, they always, and I did see him apologize to the family the next day for that.
Well, that's
I'm like,
good.
Are you? Yeah, that made me feel better, but about that, but I think he just gets so passionate into his moment that it just, mm-hmm. you know, became part of his rhythm. But
mm-hmm.
from then on, he's warned them about when pictures, so they drop their heads.
That's good. That
they
just
don't
seems
look,
so
but
ridiculous.
They can't do a facial expression about anything.
That just
anything.
Is absolutely ridiculous. We do have a couple of questions that I want to get to because we have so many people in the chat room. We have some people holding as well. But let's see, where is it here? Oh. Has the judge been alerted to Jodi Arias making faces towards Travis's family? Has she been making faces? Have you seen any of that going on at all?
You know, Jodi, when she's on the stand, is really, really far away. I've been trying to impress that in my posts and web sleuths how big mm-hmm. this courtroom is. It's like watching a sporting event like figure skating on TV, where if you're there in person, you get one view, but then you go home and you see all the close-ups of everything. So I come
mm-hmm.
home and I watch it on TV, and I can't even really make out Jodi's facial expressions from where I sit. And I'm either in the first or second row in the gallery. She's really, I've never seen a courtroom this big. She's really, really far away. But I have talked to various friends and family members out of court who have said she does, not so much she's making faces, but she does these intense stare downs. So she just locks eyes. She actually did it to Katie, Dr. Drew's juror, like the first day she was there. And I'm sure it's because Katie stands out. She looks like a Barbie doll, you know?
Uh-huh.
And Jodi wouldn't like that.
Sure.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. And she's got a really effervescent look to her. So I'm sure she stood out to Jodi and she didn't like that. And she did that the very first day I was there with Katie. Katie told me that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just last Thursday, both of Travis's friends were there, said she went from one of them and she looked away because she was the one that was maybe going to get kicked out. And
mm-hmm.
then she went to her friend and she said she looked away and then she looked back and she was still staring at her.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what she's doing. She's doing these sort of intimidated, but her stare is so blank and vacant. It's strange. You know, her look is very, very vacant to me.
Well, it's a look of no soul. You're looking at a no, it's almost like a reptile who has one track mind, and that is to cause harm. And that's what she is. She has no soul, and therefore she can stare you down and make you feel give you the creeps nonstop. She is that type of a monster. We do have a question from our chat room. Steely Dan wants to know, do you think Travis Alexander's family wants Jodi Arias put to death?
I know they do because I talked to them about it.
And what did they say?
They are 100% for the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. And did they ever waver at all, or it was just, no, we want her. We want her gone.
I have not had, actually put to death is, you know, the death penalty is very complicated. And I haven't had any in-depth conversations with them about it. I'll just say it. It's not the preferred thing for families.
Mm-hmm.
I know because I've navigated the system. Where they started abusing my family was in the appeals process. This conviction process for my sister's killers was a piece of cake compared to the appeals process. That's
mm-hmm.
when we started being abused. So I just said to Nicole, the victim's advocate, if they ever want to talk to me about that, I'd be amenable to that. But they get to choose. This family gets to choose what feels right for them. And I'm not that close to them to talk to them about the whys and wherefores,
mm-hmm.
Although I just do know that is their preferred sentence.
Katie, we've had a woman holding for a long time, Peggy. I'm going to bring her on and see what she has to say really quickly, okay? Hang tight. Peggy, let me get you on here. Let's see. Come on. Pick up. Okay, it's not picking up. Oh, there we go. Peggy, are you there, my dear?
I'm here, Trisha.
Oh.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And
thank you.
I've had 100 questions through my head since Katie got on. Thank you, Katie, for being in the courtroom and helping us understand what's going on in there. I am so honored to have this opportunity to talk to you, too, as well as listening to Beth Karras. My gosh. My question just was, in the courtroom when Jodi was going through the scenario of getting the gun and all of that on Thursday, how did that play out in live testimony? Because it sounded to me like the prosecutor really nailed her down, like that was an impossible task to get up there without disturbing anything. So I'm just wondering what your take was on that whole scenario.
Yeah, hi, Peggy. And if anybody calls in, tell me what your posting name is. Because I don't know you by your posting name, like if we've talked before online. That's a really good question, and I just posted on WebSleuth today that I call it the smoking closet, because I wrote in my notes on Thursday, this closet testimony convicts her. That's how strong it was.
Yeah.
You cannot believe her story. She was telling it in such a weak way anyway. I mean, if you're going to be describing how you leapt up on a shelf and you grabbed the gun and then you turned around and he was chasing you, and she was being evasive. She was being blank and flat and just sort of reciting a memorized story. It was so, he just completely nailed her on that. And then he shows the picture, and obviously the picture of that closet, God bless Travis, was neat as a pin. And
well,
there was disturbed, including on the shelves she would have had to climb on. It's the same as the finger photograph where he says, is your finger bent in that picture? And she said, yes, it is. And we're looking at the picture with not a bent finger. It's the same thing. He's like, so did you step on that shelf right there? And there's a sweater going all the way to the end of that shelf. It would have been
right.
Moved if you put your foot there. And she says,
right.
Yes, that's where I stepped. And he says, these are pretty tall shelves, aren't they? And she says, no, not really. They're going all the way to like a 10-foot ceiling.
Right, and he pointed that out. I thought that was fabulous. And I just don't think that he was harsh on her. I think that that's the only way you can pin her down. He had to keep going around the same story 100 times to get her to answer yes or no and answer the question. It was so frustrating. I'm sure that the jurors sort of got frustrated with that as well. But could they see that he was just trying to pin her down to pick an answer?
That would describe the entire cross-examination right there. And let me tell you something else, Peggy. The only person, this one I want everybody to know, the only person that pay attention to is Beth Karras. She is the only one that is reporting accurately, in my opinion, what I'm experiencing in that courtroom. I believe her 1,000%. And when she's saying he's not coming across so aggressive, I cannot define what the difference is, but he seems so much more aggressive when I watch him on TV than when I'm sitting in that courtroom. It's
right.
An extreme difference.
And I don't know that we have all these long, prolonged breaks in the courtroom. We're sitting there for minutes on end with stone face, waiting for them to come back from a sidebar and breaks and all this stuff. And on TV, that's filled with rapid-fire commentary. So maybe that keeps people agitated. I don't know. He's
right.
not. He doesn't come across that aggressive in person.
I don't feel like he is either. And one more comment, Trish, and then I'll quit. But
that's
oh my
fine,
gosh,
Peggy.
I am so grateful that you have this.
Well, you've been holding for so long. You are welcome to take your time. Go right ahead.
Thank you. So my last comment just was about the death penalty, and you know, I am really on the fence about that. Just for my, I'm not sure that I could decide life and death. It's just too big of an issue. But you know, when she killed him and then assassinated his character, that's what really pushes me over the edge to want her to get the death penalty, is she not only killed him, but then turned right around and tried to save her soul by assassinating his character. And to me, that's just double. I mean, and I'm wondering if anyone else feels that. I mean, I was really on the fence about it because I am about the death penalty anyway. But once they went down that road and started with all of the lies about the pedophilia and the, you know, his abuse, and I'm a domestic abuse victim from years ago, and I'm telling you, it just doesn't happen like that in real life. You don't travel 1,000 miles back to an abuser once you've broken away. I mean, your biggest fear is that they're going to come after you. You don't go back to the person. I just don't know that that's ever happened. And I've tried to help people that have been in domestic violence situations, and I've just never seen any of that. So I'm really anxious to hear what the domestic violence.
It is going to be interesting to see, because if the person is a true domestic violence advocate, they can't logically, like you said, Peggy, they can't say, well, this is what domestic violence people do. Yeah, they go back. Of course they do. That happens a lot.
If they're tied to it with children,
yes,
or with
exactly
with time, but you can't develop that kind of tie. I mean, I'm just so anxious to hear what they say, because I've just not known anybody, and I've been doing this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when they go back, it's because they're afraid of getting their children taken away from them. You know, it's so much more complicated than a boyfriend-girlfriend 5-month relationship, and then having all the diaries and none of it adding up. And I mean, you can just tell that it's all blatant lies, and it's so frustrating to sit back and watch them put the family through all this stuff when
exactly.
It's totally
and
unnecessary.
That's just it, Peggy, and I'm sure as Katie will testify to as well, we're frustrated and angry, and we can't stand her. Can you imagine what Travis's family is going through?
Oh,
Peggy,
man.
Thank you so much. Thank you, my dear, and thank you for holding for so long. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
I want to
Katie,
add something,
and thanks
Peggy.
For being there.
Oh,
but
go ahead. Go ahead, Katie. Go ahead. Katie,
point,
cool lady.
I think that what we may see in closing arguments, to your point, Peggy, is that, you know how he said in his opening statement how she killed him three different ways? I think we'll
right.
see him say, and she killed him a fourth way in this trial,
right.
in his closing argument. After he was dead, she decided to kill him one more time. When is she going to stop killing this man? I think
right.
we're going to see something like that. And I think that your sentiments about domestic violence victims, there are 12 jurors on there, there's 16 now, but there will be 12 jurors. Somebody in there, male, female, whatever, is going to have an experience and a history with domestic violence, either with themselves or around them. And
right.
I think Juan Martinez would be smart to say, this is an affront to true domestic violence victims, and that will piss them off, just like
yeah.
we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Thank
exactly.
you, Katie, so much for all of your reporting. I appreciate it, Tricia. Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Take care now.
Okay.
We're talking with Katie Cool Lady. If you are on websleuth.com, then you know Katie Cool Lady. She is a victim's advocate. She is in the courtroom during the Jody Arias trial. Jody Arias is on trial for brutally murdering Travis Alexander, and Katie is sitting with Travis's family. We do have one more caller. She's been holding for quite some time, Katie. We're going to go and see what she has to say. This is Haley and or Hallie. I'm not sure which one. Are you there, my dear?
Hello.
Hi.
This
is Tricia.
Am I talking to Tricia?
You are. You are on the air, my dear. What is your question?
Thank you. Yes, I'm Hallie, and I'm brand spanking new to Web Sleuths, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity.
You're welcome.
I do have a question for Katie. Out of all of the days that you have spent in the courtroom, which day or experience stands out the most to you and why?
Wow, that's a great question.
That is a good question.
Yeah, you know, I think I have to say last Thursday, start to finish, well, the first day was just like, whoa, you know, blown away. But these days that Jody's been on the stand are just like watching, you know, some sort of a creature in a cage.
Right.
You know, but I think what happened, I mean, I think she was convicted last Thursday on the closet and the finger.
Mm-hmm.
Admitted that her finger was injured. And that right there, those two things completely knock out premeditation. I mean, completely
mm-hmm.
knock out self-defense. And
right.
they completely support premeditation without, you know, the details. I don't need to go into the details of why, but they
right.
do. And I thought, mm-hmm. it's all over. And I thought, I almost read that for a minute in her, like a resignation. Actually, I wasn't the only person, because I went out to dinner after that with a lot of other people that were in the courtroom, including Katie from Dr. Drew, and we were all comparing
right.
notes, and we all had the same impressions. We're writing the same things down in our notes, that it seemed like he was edging her up toward a confession. Like,
yes.
It just had a feel like she's going to break down and just admit everything. But,
mm-hmm.
of course, she's not going to do that because she's a sociopath. But it just had that feeling of, like, giving up. And I think she was convicted on Thursday, the last day of-
I totally agree with you. And, unfortunately, I missed the first couple of days of any of the trial. I didn't see the opening, darn it. But Thursday for me was like the changing point. I'm glad to hear that. And also, I'm going to just put this in. I just really appreciate the venue of Web Sleuths, Tricia.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody that, you know, puts their input too. I just love every single iota of everything, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. And let me just say, having with that incredible compliment, and that is very generous of you, and I am humbled by your words, and I do appreciate it. It is the incredibly hardworking moderators like Kimster, and I mean, I'm going to leave somebody out, so I am not going to name them all, and our co-owner, Sue. I mean, they work so hard. So it's definitely an effort of a whole bunch of people volunteering their time and our posters that come that from all over the world. And it is just a great organization. I have to admit, I love it. But when people say thanks to me, I've got to tell them it's not me. It's a lot of other people working 24/7 around the clock to make sure that Web Sleuths is a decent place to post where you don't have to worry about being attacked and you don't have to worry about all that craziness that goes on other forums. So thank you so much for calling, my dear. I
right.
do appreciate it. And
so
thank you
lucky.
For holding.
I'm just going to put one more thing out there if I can.
Yeah.
You know, when Jody was being so evasive and everything, I would love to have the controller of the stun belt. I'm just saying, I'll leave it at that, but I want to thank everybody. And Katie, cool lady, I read you. I'm so, so new, but I've just really enjoyed every day that you report back to all of us, as well as everybody. So thank you, and have a good one.
Thank you so much for calling. A brand new Web Sleuths member, Holly.
Brand 18.
Wow, brand spanking new. You are brand spanking new.
Thanks
for calling. And
thank you. Take care.
You too. Take care. And Katie, cool lady, wow, you have a big effect on people. And one thing I want you to realize, Katie, that how much, in addition to how much we appreciate what you're doing, people from all over the world are coming to Web Sleuths to read what you are saying. So you are making an impact in people's lives. And the great thing about Web Sleuths is, and sometimes it's frustrating, is you don't know how many people you have affected in a positive way. So when you come on and give so much of yourself like you do, you are really making a difference in a lot of people's lives. And I talked to you personally on the phone last night, thank you for all that you do for us on Web Sleuths. Katie Coolady, I have a question. I missed part of this, part of the trial. I am a big believer in finding out why. Why do people behave like they do? I'm not using it as an excuse. That doesn't mean that they're not to be punished. But I think if we don't find out why people are serial killers or why people are liars or why people become a psychopath, if we don't find out why, then we can't fix it. We can't stop it. And Jodi Arias, to me, is such an unusual creature in that the only thing I could figure out is she claims she was hit with a wooden spoon when she was younger. What in her background that you heard would even suggest turning into this monster? Or is there anything?
You know, that's a really like a million-dollar question. And I think that's part of what causes me to follow certain trials that have sociopaths as the defendant, because it is that mind wanting to understand why. Because I think for myself only, if I can understand why, maybe it won't come into my life again, you know, as it has. And I think it is remains for me a huge question mark. I think everything that Jodi Arias says is suspicious. I do not believe personally one thing that she says that is not corroborated by something else or someone else who's credible. I just don't. I toss it all out because she is so manipulative and so easy to lie. And, you know, I'll just say this. You know, I know a lot of people have a lot of issues with her mother and her mother's, I think, twin sister who's sitting in court. Mm-hmm. And I have too, you know, and it's easy to want to blame them, you know, blame her mom and all that. And I don't know that her mom ever hit her with anything. I mean, I think if she did, Jodi probably deserved it. But I don't think that, you know, I don't know that that necessarily happened. But I had like one of those just minute brief encounters with Jodi's mom in the bathroom, just in passing, because we're all using the same restroom. And I was left thinking, oh, my God, this person is not who I've projected them to be. Mm-hmm. She is, and I'm saying this in a very distinct sense of the word, definition of the word, without trying to be rude to her because she's a total stranger to me, but she's a simpleton.
Mm-hmm.
She does not understand the gravity of what's going on here. She's a small town girl. She bred a monster, but I think Jodi Arias came from some other whatever. I don't know where she came from, but she dropped into this family. But I just don't get a sense off her mom that she's that bright, that she's that sophisticated, that she's that hip to what's going on. I think Jodi is far beyond her capacity to manage. And
that's,
I don't blame her.
I'm sorry, what did you say? I cut you off. What did you say?
I don't blame her mom.
And I don't either. I'm just wondering, something like this, somebody like this who is such a horrific creature, you would think there would be sexual abuse, there would be beatings, there would be abandonment, there would be all these issues. I mean, you can go back and look at Charles Manson. His mother was a prostitute. Ted Bundy found out his sister was really his mother when he was, you know, 15, and he started killing women that looked like her. I mean, there's all these reasons. Again, not excuses, Katie, but reasons that maybe we can learn from and prevent it from happening. And you put it perfectly. She dropped out of somewhere else, some other sphere of evilness that we don't know about. She was born this way, it seems. And there was something in her brain that just kicked in that has turned her into this liar. I'm just kind of speculating here, but perhaps early on she learned that if she told a lie, it would get her what she wanted. And it could be something as simple as that.
Yeah, and a person who doesn't have a conscience, they're going to move through life very differently than you or I would. Like, when I was following the Scott Peterson trial, I don't think he's quite as evil as Jodi Arias, to be honest with you, because she seems to really enjoy torturing people after the fact.
Yes,
I agree.
I think
with Scott Peterson, I think with Casey Anthony, it was as horrible and heinous as it was. I think it was a simple decision of, I do not want to be in the situation that I'm in. I don't want to be a father. I don't want to be a mother. And how am I going to do with it? And that person without a conscience looks at that situation and says, oh, I could divorce or I could kill. It'd be a lot more to my benefit if that person was dead. I may as well just go ahead and do that. They don't have a conscience blocking them for that decision. So I think that's Keith Anthony and Scott Peterson. However, I think Jodi Arias is another breed. She's sadistic. She sent 20 irises to Travis's grandmother with a note saying, Travis told me he always wanted to name his child Iris. She did that to destroy that woman who raised him and rescued those children from their horrible childhood. They had a horrible childhood, those children. And she sent that to twist a knife in his grandmother.
Oh, my God.
He always wanted to call his daughter Iris. Let me just remind you how you will never have a great-granddaughter named Iris.
Yeah, I killed him.
Yeah. And she has an element of her. There's a poster on Web Sleuth named Brits Kate that has this down. She really understands this element. And she's really taught me a lot about this, that there's something about Jodi Arias that it wasn't just simple, I want this person out of my life. She enjoys the suffering of others.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that takes her into another element for me, and I have no idea what she just needs to put away.
Oh, she got, well, she's like an animal that needs to be put down because
yeah,
she's a danger. Well, there are three women on death row in Arizona, one of them put on there by Mr. Martinez. But you're right. She does need to be put down, whether she will or not. That's another story. Because
she'll be sentenced to death, no doubt. She will be sentenced to death, my opinion. But, you know, as I know, it's decades before she'll if ever.
And here's
23 hours a day in a cell.
Here's the thing, Katie. Don't you think Jodi will cause just as much havoc and perhaps not can't get a hold of a knife and kill anybody, but she'll create problems and there'll be all kinds of drama and she'll harm as many people as she can behind bars. It won't stop. Don't you agree?
It will not stop. And, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, she's had a project now, which is getting herself out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
But once that project is gone, and she's either going to get life without parole or the death penalty. Either way, she's going to be in prison for life.
Yes.
You know, no doubt. And she'll know that. So, you know, then she'll start playing her games in there because that will be her new playing field.
Exactly. She takes her playing field and she loves to destroy. And what was the name of the poster that you said on Web Sleuth who had it down? Can you give that name again, please?
Her name is Brit Kate. I read her. I made a joke one day. I say, I've noticed that I'm liking your posts before I even read them because she knows this territory very well. And she was the one that got me to start looking at that this is a person who's very sadistic. And what I think was fascinating about Jodi Arias to me and other people is that she speaks and looks like an angel. You know, she doesn't
she looks beautiful.
She's like a librarian.
Yeah, now she doesn't.
But
looked beautiful with that blonde hair.
Yeah, she's got the breathy voice. She's got the kind of batting eyes. And she does not look like the monster that she is. So there's that, like, wow factor of her moving among us and slinging eggs in a restaurant and serving people that would have no idea. You just have to look at the brutality of that crime scene, look at her hands, and know what she did with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it blows your mind. It just blows your mind.
Absolutely. Are you thinking about writing a book? I think you should.
You know, other people have approached me on that, and actually I had an encounter with a person that I knew from Facebook that we met through something else completely entirely, and I was watching a show, a Dateline-type show or whatever, and all of a sudden her name popped up, and she's the mother of a homicide victim. We had no idea we had that in common.
Oh, wow.
And I know. I mean, and it's Daryl Mack, and he killed her daughter, Sharla Mack. Anyway, so people probably know that case. Anyway, and she was my Facebook friend for like a year before we even knew we had that in common. So, I mean, I was shaking. I picked up the phone like, oh, my God. Anyway, so she has been in the process of writing a book with another woman. I can't remember her name, but she was like a real high-profile person, the first person that was stalked, like a celebrity. She was stalked and shot by somebody or stabbed or something, but she survived. Anyway, that's a personal friend of hers. And she's approached me about going in on a book that really is more about, less about the brutality of the crime. Everybody knows those stories. It's more about, how do you create a life for yourself? How do you survive? How do you thrive? I mean, one of the messages that I hope to get across to Travis Alexander's friends or family or people that see me moving through the world is that you can have really, for me, it was the worst thing I could ever imagine happening in my life. It was truly, mm-hmm. I'm done. There's nothing worse that could ever happen to me of what happened of losing my sister in that way. Mm-hmm. And you still get to have your own life. You still get to have a happy life. You still get to have your own destiny, even though, and part of this, you know, back to the web sleuth thing, I have to thank you and the people that are waiting for me. When I come home after being in court, it gives me a purpose to my suffering that I've been through that I can do something with it. Otherwise, I'm just living with it.
Mm-hmm. But oh, you certainly can do something. Yes, you can do a lot. You can help a lot. Absolutely. When you post, it's something that everybody waits for. It really is.
Well, I feel bad because I'm like, because part of the really cool stuff that happens is after court and the people that I get to meet and the conversations I have. And I don't know if you know, we had a whole web sleuth gathering last week where people came from out of state, and we have like 14 of us in this rooftop happy hour we go to, and there were so many conversations going on and so many people gathered together, and half of them were posters from web sleuth.
Oh, that's great.
Oh,
that is wonderful. That is amazing. Well, and you're living proof that after a horrific event like a murder in your family, there is another story to tell, and it doesn't have anything to do with the killer and their families and their life. It has to do with the life that you have and the life that you create after something like this happens. And that's a story that needs to be told. And I, for one, would love it if you wrote a book because the way you write, the way you talk, you'd be perfect. It would be a great book. It would be a Lifetime movie of the week, no doubt. So I think it would be something, you know, if I could just impose my views on your life here right now, even though we don't hardly know each other, I think you should write a book because, by golly, you'd be good at it. So give it a thought. You certainly have a base that would buy it immediately, that's for sure. Now, Katie, cool lady, you're going to be there every day, right, at the trial. Are you able to make it every day?
I'll be there tomorrow all day, you know, and every day is like if I'm going to get in. But, boy, she traveled.
Right.
Family had a lot of people there last week. So let me tell you this, all seven of his siblings were in court last week, all seven.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so for me to get a seat, it was lucky. But
it was very lucky.
So this week they probably won't all be there, but so I should have no trouble getting in. And how I'm kind of managing my life right now is lucky I have a very fluid job situation. So I'm working in the mornings and I'm heading over for the afternoon testimony. So
that's
I
good.
Should be there most days this week.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if people want to give me an assignment, you know, because the jury's really hard to read. So they're kind of far away, and B, they're really pretty neutral. So you're really looking for very subtle things with the jury.
Mm-hmm.
And anything, any possible little thing that I find myself looking for, and at the same time I'm writing notes, you know, but if people say, oh, I want you to check out this, or I want you to, you know, whatever, I will do that. So all they have to do is ask
great.
Me, you know, ask a question. Or Beth Karras is amazing. She's always available, you know, to approach her if she has time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of keep a little list of questions for Beth because she knows so much, you know. So,
right,
anyway.
She does. Well, here's the thing. Let me get my. I've totally lost track because I was just so involved in what you were saying. Oh, let's talk a little bit about Ricky Lake. You're going to be on the Ricky Lake show, right?
Yeah, next week.
Let's hear about
tomorrow.
This. How did that come about? How did that happen?
Trisha, this is another one of those bizarre moments of serendipity. I was literally last week walking into the courthouse. I was walking up, and my phone rang to the Culver City number. I thought, I better get this. And it was a producer from the Ricky Lake show. And he said, I want to talk to you. I know all about your sister's case. It's the 25th anniversary. I'm like, it is? Believe me, that's not an anniversary I track. So I didn't even know. It's 25 years, you know. And he said, I've read a lot about your case. I'm from the Ricky Lake show. We're wanting to do a show. Would you be willing to talk to me about it? I said, well, actually, right now, I'm just like, I'm huffing and puffing. I'm saying, I'm trying to get into the courthouse to the Jodi Arias trial. In my head, I'm completely 100% assuming he plucked me out of web sleuth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, and plus I was on Dr. Drew just one night, and so I thought, oh, well, he's followed some breadcrumbs to find me that way. And he goes, you are? And I said, I'm walking into the courthouse for the Jodi Arias trial. He goes, you are? And I said, well, yeah, like, isn't that how you found me? And he goes, oh, I don't really know anything about that case. It was completely, totally separate. It had no
really?
Connection. So So he called me the next day, and he told me, I luckily I had some time to talk to Bill. Dr. Drew's producer, Bill, is just an absolute sweetheart, and I've become friendly with him. And so he said, I think you should do it. It's a good show, and it would be kind of good, you know, like in terms of the stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Sensibility. So anyway, I mean, I didn't want to get involved like a Jerry Springer type thing.
No.
So he called me the next day, and I've talked to them many, many times, and he said, the theme of the show is murder for money, and we know, and that is an element of our case that I really has not gotten out there enough. That I hold the insurance companies as culpable on one level as the men who killed my sister.
And why is that?
Part of the case. Well, they waived every bit of their checks and balances to sell this insurance policy to this man who walked in after marrying my sister for 1 week. Walked in requesting $1 million of insurance on my sister's life, had no job, no social security number, no bank account. My sister was working as a pizza waitress.
Mm-hmm.
The premium on the policy was more than the rent on her apartment. And he was so enamored with this potential sale that at every step along the way, they waived their checks and balances, even to the point where they called my sister. I had to read this in my sister's diary on the witness stand in court.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, where I testified many, many times in our cases. And my sister wrote in her own diary, I'm so relieved. Michael, so-and-so, Doug Ramsey called me. Michael passed the background check with the insurance company, which assuaged her own gut feeling that something was wrong. The background check was this, one and only thing, a phone call to her.
That was it?
That was the beginning, middle, and end of any background check. And it went through several gates. And they sold that policy. It arrived on December 22nd, and they took her to the desert and slit her throat and stabbed her 30-some times in the desert December 23rd, the very next day.
You're right. They are culpable. No question.
And we sued
they
them.
Never would have done that. Never would have done that if you didn't have that policy.
They would have moved on. They would have moved on to somebody else. It was 100% for money.
Mm-hmm.
And we, a big law firm in Phoenix took on our case. They said, we're taking it on pro bono, knowing that the odds are stacked against us because this is a case that needs to be tried. And so we went through a whole nother trial with the insurance company. Not only did we lose, but my sister had paid for that life insurance on her own life with her own money out of her own checking account. They, of course, didn't pay one dime toward it, you know, her killers. And that insurance company refused to pay her life insurance to our family because he had taken it out fraudulently on her. But she was the one that took it out on herself. They just find every single twisted way to avoid paying it.
No.
So we sued them and we lost. So when Ricky Lake Show called me and said, we want to do it about murder for money, I'm like, that is a story I want to get out there, because if you think your insurance company is protecting you, think again, it got my sister murdered. That insurance agent.
What life insurance company, can you say?
It was Banner and Surety. It was two companies. I mean, this guy also, the insurance agent had a charge of fraud for stealing money from in another state. I mean, there was so much nefarious stuff in this whole thing, but it wasn't him. It was him and everybody that was complicit in trying to get him to make the sale.
Everyone that touched that file should be held culpable.
Yep, and when he was told that my sister was murdered, the first thing he said was, he did it.
Oh, he knew. He knew.
He knew.
He was selling it, and
he
knew it was going to happen. What a disgusting pig. Oh, dear God. That is a story that needs to get out there. Yes, you do need to write a book. That needs to get out there. And you have to wonder, hopefully now, since that was over 20 years ago that this happened? Katie?
I don't know. I think it was like in 1994.
It was a while ago. And so hopefully now with the internet, and hopefully things are better, and you can't get $1 million policy just at the snap of your fingers, and you can't do it fraudulently. Let's hope. But maybe not.
Let's hope.
Maybe.
That's
a horrible thing to hope. I mean, we shouldn't have to hope. It should just be, for God's sakes, you know.
And for me, that is something I will be a face for, because – I will go on that show. I mean, you know, that is something, instead of just talking about the horrific nature of my sister's death, which obviously it was and is, that we are living with all the time, it happened at Christmas, for God's sake, you know. But to be able to be that face and use it for good of, you know, this is what can happen. Be aware. You know, if you meet somebody and he's trying to take out life insurance, you know, whatever, just awareness, awareness, you know. So that's
exactly.
That's a platform that I'm open to. So
well, that is
Monday. They're flying me out there, taping on Tuesday.
And I want you to know you can come on my radio show anytime and we can discuss it as much as you want. I want to get back just a moment to the Travis Alexander murder and the Jody Arias trial. We're talking with Katie Cool Lady from Web Sleuths. She is fortunately in the courtroom, fortunately for us, and she comes back and reports so graciously to us every day to tell us what has been happening and her thoughts on what is going on. What can you tell us? Some behind-the-scenes stuff that we would just never know about that, you know, we find everything interesting. We're sleuthers. We want to know everything. I don't care if it's a little detail. We love it. Can you give us some couple of little tidbits from behind the scenes that we may not know about?
Well, just to reiterate what I already said, listen to Beth Karras. Really only listen to Beth Karras. And, you know, things are changing. I'm sure people know with what's happening within session and her level of reporting. But she will be reporting on this trial through the entire rest of the trial to some degree. So pay attention to her. She's the only person that absolutely knows what's going on in that courtroom, and she is reporting it accurately as I see it myself with my own eyes. I don't think people are worried. You know what I think it is? It is Casey Anthony PTSD.
Exactly right. I have post-traumatic stress disorder, Casey Anthony style.
Yep.
That's it. No question.
Everybody does. The Casey Anthony verdict was an absolute anomaly. It is not what happens. It is like 1%, 0.0001%. It is not, that is lightning striking. And this woman is going to be convicted and she's going to be sentenced to death. I know I keep saying that. I'm not a psychic. It's nothing like that. But I will tell you that the evidence in our trials that was kind of really a slam dunk, both of ours, is not even as strong as this trial. It's
not.
Oh,
wow.
And there are no jurors. I mean, people are really interested in the jurors. And, of course, I'm watching them like a hawk when I'm in there. And oftentimes I have a really, really good view of them. They are not on board with her, Jody Arias. They are not. There is one little interesting little web sleuth, you know, element of that, though. With
Let's
jurors.
Hear it. Let's hear it.
Well, there, you know, those of us, I mean, my friend Anita Richmond, she posts from web sleuth. She's a dear old friend of mine. I met her through the Scott Peterson trial through the internet. So anyway, she came up and she went to court and she made a really kind of brilliant post and she sort of nicknamed all the jurors. So I'd encourage people to go back and look at that. Well, she calls this one juror Maureen. Anyway, that's what we call this one juror. And she does turn her body toward Jody Arias. And Janine Drivers calls it naval intelligence. If you're turning your body and your navel is directed at someone, that means that you are, you know, giving them high regard, you know, or you're connecting with them. And so she said, look for that. Well, the only one that's doing that is this one woman. She's third in on the back row. And, boy, she has her swivel chair swiveled directly at Jody. So that's the person that people have been concerned about, is her. 100% of the rest of them, most of them don't even look at her. I mean, the feeling I get is they're just so over it. They're just ready to, you know, check the verdict form of guilty. They're just looking ahead. Even when she's talking, they're not looking at her. When she's talking and looking at them, they are not looking at her. I follow her gaze. She's looking at the jury railing where she's looking over their head. Not one person is making connection with her when she is looking at the jury at all. I never, ever, not once have seen that. Whether they walk in, walking out, sitting down, or testifying, nobody is making contact with her. But this Maureen on the back does, you know, do that naval intelligence. She swivels her chair. She's way, like, directly confrontation. So people have been concerned about that. Well, somebody posted on Web Sleuths. It's been posted there multiple times. Then a whole bunch of female posters the other day said, if I was on that, and I, on that jury, and if I knew what I know, you know, if I was having, feeling like I was guilty, I would face this bitch off just like that.
Well,
I
that's what I was thinking.
Care.
Yeah, and just face her. Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's universal signs. I did find that body language stuff interesting.
It
and
is
there are
very
universal,
interesting.
But when I read that, like, there's a really, cool poster on Lex's, like Linda, New Jersey, or NJ, and she just
said
what's
on
her mind.
Linda, NJ, she's great.
Yeah, and she just says what's on her mind. So I think she might have opened that door, but she was definitely in that crowd of like, oh, hell yes, if I was on that jury, I would be facing her directly, I'd be watching her intensely, but, you know, I also believe she's 1,000% guilty, and then all these other people followed and said, oh, I'm glad you said that, I would do the same thing, I wouldn't be turning away from her, I would be facing her. And when I read that thread, I thought, I'm not worried about this Maureen anymore.
Yeah,
not at all.
And that's true. That's how I feel. But it is interesting, the body language. We've had Dr. Lillian Glass on the show quite a few times, and she is so fascinating. I'm going to get her on the show to talk about Jodi Arias in the upcoming weeks. But something like that, you know, it might be true in other instances in life, but in something like this, I would face her. I absolutely would turn and face her, I hope. But, okay, it's interesting that up until that point, there was some concern with this juror, you've nicknamed Marion. That's my concern, is that there might just be one. There could just be one. I'm really glad to hear that Juan Martinez does not come across as harsh in real life as he does on TV. That is a great relief to me.
The other thing about that, too, is if those of us that are watching this trial are outraged about what she did, and they have already seen those pictures, there are jurors on there that feel just like we do, and they want somebody to be outraged about this with her.
Yes.
They want somebody to call her on this and to hold her accountable and to be vicious toward her. They're going to feel actually satisfied by his aggressiveness.
I hope so. I hope you're right. Like I said, I would love to be wrong in this situation. Katie, cool lady, you have been such a cool lady to come on with us tonight. And I want you to know you have an open invitation to come back anytime you want. Is there anything that you want to say that we haven't touched on tonight? We have plenty of time left. If you want to touch on it, we can continue to talk. Or if you just want to wrap it up, I'll leave it up to you and give you the floor.
Well, I've been posting, I just want, you know, the posters to know that I've been posting, you know, all my notes from the day on that Courtroom Observer thread. Our moderator is really awesome, Nurse Beanie.
Yes,
anyway,
she is.
Really, really, really a good moderator. And so she opened up a thread for just that, for not just me, but other people that are going to court to post their notes. So sometimes I get there and people are like, oh, well, Katie's not here. She's not posting her notes. I don't know that everybody knows that they're all in that one thread. They're all going to be in a separate thread. So I'm not as present in the daily kind of conversation thread as I was before because I spend a lot of time. I have pages and pages and pages of notes. But I do kind of want to end this on the feeling that, you know, everybody thanks me and thank you for doing this and all that. But for me, it's thank you for giving me a job. You know, thank you for giving me a purpose to my own tragedy that's happened in my life. And I feel like, I think everybody that goes through tragedy feels like you want to give back or you want to do something or you want to make something of it or whatever that is. And being able to go to court and have people that care that I'm going to court and care about my perceptions and my observations, it kind of gives me some sort of comfort. So we're all in this together is what I want to say. It's
absolutely
not just me doing something for other people. Everybody there that is commenting to me is doing something to help heal my heart as well.
Oh,
so I want to leave it.
Katie, that is such a great way to leave it because, as I have said a million times on this show, I want people to join Web Sleuths. I made a vow early on. It would never, ever cost anything. It will always be free. And even if you feel like you're not a good sleuther, which you probably are, but you just don't give yourself credit, if you don't know what to say, even just coming on and saying, I'm so sorry to hear this happen to you, or thank you for posting, it means so much to the victims and their families, just like you said, Katie, right?
Yeah, it does.
It does.
And in terms of posting on Web Sleuths too, there will be newbies that come on there and they come in with like, oh, I'm nervous, this is my first post, but I noticed this. And then I'm looking at it like, oh my gosh, I had never, ever, ever thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not a scary place to be. Web Sleuths, believe me, I've been on other boards. Web Sleuths is definitely the tamest and safest place to post. And, you know, overcome a little bit of that fear of having your voice because you might come up with an idea that actually, you know, is new.
Absolutely. So. And it can happen. We've done it before on Web Sleuths. Katie, cool lady, you are now going to be one of the official guests that we'll have on a lot on Trisha's True Crime Radio. And if there's anything else we can do for you, don't you hesitate to ask, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Trisha.
Take care, Katie. We'll see you on the board.
Okay. I'll be there.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Wow, what a show. Oh, my gosh, Kim, sir. I was worried that poor Katie couldn't get through and we'd never talk to her and that it would just be me babbling like an idiot, which it kind of was. But then Beth called in. It turned out great. Didn't you think so?
You know, this is one of my favorite shows, honestly. And not only, you know, we had Beth on here, we had Katie Cool Lady. Wow, what a blessing to get to know her better. But mm-hmm. we also had some really good call-ins from our members tonight. Wow. And
yes.
We had old and new, and it was just an awesome show all the way around. Thank you, everybody.
I want to thank the people for calling in, because when we couldn't get a hold of Katie and Beth hadn't called in, and we had planned to start the show, I was at a loss for words, as you could probably tell by me mumbling around there, and you saved me for calling in. So thank you very much. And Katie Cool Lady is now officially one of my favorite people, as well with Beth Karras and you, Kimster, of course. Kimster, next week it's going to be another great show. I'm sure we'll focus again on Jodi Arias. I'm going to try and get Dr. Glass on. We'll try and get Holly Hughes on and a few other people. But I want to thank you, Kimster. You had a busy night. You did a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
It was fun. And do remember this, everybody, okay? Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Check out their website. It's Canines, that's Canines with a Cause, CAUSE.com. And do remember this, my darling angels. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and the guests, and of course, I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com LLC and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get your true crime panties in a wad about something that was said, WebSleuths and Forums for Justice are not responsible, okay? Is there such a thing as true crime panties? I don't know. We'll have to check it out. Okay, everybody, we'll see you here next week, same time, same place, Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.